Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar.
Good evening, everybody. We have a great show for you tonight. And we're going to talk about something that's not really addressed a lot. And I think it's really, really important. My guest is Joel Dodson, and he's from TSV Sound and Vision. And basically what he does is he does what they call backline. They do backline. They supply amps and more than just amps. And I'll have him explain exactly what he does. And he's based out of St. Louis, Missouri. And so I want to talk a little bit about this because this is more common now today. The expenses for touring and stuff, you can't bring your own gear all the time. And so you have to have gear delivered at the spot, rented for you to do the gig. And my two guests that are here that are avid players, one is Kathy Lauer, who has been, again, both these guys have been on the show several times. Kathy's in a group called Sister Skinnerd. You probably know her from Tone Zone LA. She built one of my pedal boards, and she does a lot of pedal board design and stuff like that. But she just finished from a European tour. And Steve Pfister has been playing everywhere, and he goes every year to Europe and also plays around the United States. And then my good friend Doug, he's a local guy. But
Doug.
So we got two guitar players and a bass player here.
Hey now.
Welcome, everybody. Joel, welcome to the show, everybody.
Hey, Joel.
Hey. Hey, thank you so much for having me, guys. I'm just really glad to be here.
Oh, no problem. And I want you to thank Emily Kaiser, who works with you. She was the one that contacted me and reached out. Ever so grateful.
Emily, if you're hearing this, thank you so much. I'm sure they'll be tuning in as soon as this airs, because I know they're all very excited to be a part of it. So
anyway, let's start out real quick. Tell us what you do and what, you know, give us a good synopsis of the company and what you offer in terms of, you know, renting equipment out, and because you do more than just music instruments.
Yeah. So TSV Sound and Vision is basically an audio visual lighting and event production company. So what we do is we specialize in live events. And of course, we've all heard the term AV or, you know, audiovisual. That's essentially what I do. Now, because the industry is so vast, that can cover anything from someone renting a projector and screen to me producing a series of concert events to web streaming and, more poignant to this conversation. It includes a lot of live audio and backline equipment rental because live events can look a multitude of ways, right? And a lot of times, hey, we need live entertainment. And what better way to do that than have a band? Well, you know, we gotta keep, just like we gotta keep an inventory of speakers and subs and mixers and mics. Hey, we gotta keep a pretty good hefty inventory of amps and guitars and drum kits and keyboards, because, like you said, it's really challenging for musicians who are touring, who are traveling, who are making multiple stops, or who are making one-off stops, right? It's really hard for them to be traveling with gear. And, you know, let's be honest, if you have some stuff that you're really fond of, you might want to keep that at home. Let me bring that out. So you know, the industry is very vast, and, you know, we have to cover a multitude of things. So, yeah, and it doesn't hurt that, you know, I'm a guitar player. I've been playing for 25 years, and, you know, I'm a collector, and it's just something I love to do. So it's kind of neat that I get to do it for work too. So,
well, you're the backline stuff that you supply. Like, for example, if somebody comes in and says, "I want a Blackface Twin or a Plexi Marshall," do you have that, or is there, you know, how does that work?
Yes, so absolutely. So we have to carry, it's, you know, what I would consider industry standard equipment, right? So, you know, a 65 reissued twin or a Blackface twin, that is definitely, I would consider, like, probably the first piece of gear that you should probably have in a backline inventory. But yeah, we try to really hone in on what are the industry standard pieces for guitar players, bass players, keyboard players, drummers. And then, you know, we might have a couple little one-offs here and there. You know, I've got a couple little boutique amps that I found have done really well in the backline requests. And I've got little, you know, smaller combo amps and larger heads and cabs. So really it is a mixture, but you are right. There is kind of this middle of the road, your focus on sort of industry standard.
Mm-hmm. So the, but so somebody can, it, now if you don't have it, can you get it? So if somebody says,
sure,
I want a Plexi Marshall.
Of course. I mean, that, yeah. So that's another great question too. You know, being in the event industry, I'm going to just by the nature of the industry itself, I'm going to have some connections. If I don't have a piece of gear, I'm going to have the immediate connection to be able to get that. And, you know, more important, well, or as important, I've got the guys that can get it to they can get it to the gig.
Okay. Now, you're based in St. Louis, but how far out do you reach? Do you, like, deliver to Chicago? Do you do stuff for other out of state?
Absolutely. So TSV right now has three locations. We're in St. Louis, we're in Los Angeles, and we're in Austin, Texas. And all of those branches really do have a national reach. I mean, I myself have produced shows in Chicago. I've produced shows in Florida. And I've produced shows in Seattle, just out of the St. Louis branch. And New York for that matter. So, I mean, we really do pride ourselves in trying to be very flexible. Now, granted, if you just need a couple amps dropped off a venue in Chicago, and I'm in St. Louis, it's probably not going to be very cost effective to have my guys travel, you know, about 260 miles to Chicago, while there's still, you know, some great backline rental companies in the Chicago market. So, you know, in terms of like the sort of, you know, kind of more, let's call them more narrow markets like backline rental and stuff, generally speaking, that is best served within that exact market. Or as part of a traveling multi-day production.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I was talking with Kathy before the show, and I wanted to ask your opinion of this. Because, like, for example, let's say that these guys are touring, like, on a bus tour where they're driving from city to city. Would it be more cost-effective for them to rent a set of equipment that they take with them in the bus and go from city to city. So they rent for like a 2 or 3 week period, as opposed to having rent for each city a different, you know, having it supplied at each different venue. Is that cost effective? And the reason I'm asking that is, too, is these guys, we were talking about that in Europe, too. That's another issue. When you go from country to country, which is like state to state here, it's much, you know. So what is your take? What do you think would be the more efficient way to do that or cost effective?
Yeah, so I've done that before for sure. I've had bands. We meet up in St. Louis. They have a stop there, and then they have another. They have, you know, a leg of their Midwest tour, and then they're coming back through or near St. Louis. You know, after about a week or so. And so, what I like to do is I try to give them a break in the rate so that it really does make that very cost effective for them. So, you know, generally speaking, what I like to do is if they need the gear for a week, I like to do some sort of reduced daily rate. So maybe they have it for 7 days, but they're only paying for three. And then, you know, that helps me because the gear is, you know, probably would have just stayed on the shelf, and it goes on the road and it gets used and people enjoy it. And, you know, that's a nice rental for us. And, you know, also it just kind of helps kind of move that process along of, you know, getting these bands the gear that they need for the period of time. So I do think that there are some very there are some ways that a good backline rental company can work with a band. Yeah. And say, hey, you know what, you're gonna have this for 2 weeks. Why don't we do like six rental days or something like that? You guys take good care of the stuff, and we'll see you in 10 days, or we'll see you in 2 weeks, or you know, whatever it is.
Hey, Joel, this is Steve here. Quick Steve, question:
hey.
How you doing, man? How do you guys handle the maintenance with stuff? Say you rent something for a week, and do you guys go through? Is it checked out before it? When it comes in and goes out, what's your procedure on that?
Well, as you can imagine, I don't mind doing quality control in the shop. all the guys around the shop know when we have backline going out because I plug in all the guitars and, you know, mm-hmm. I maybe take some liberties and testing some of the gear for maybe it may be longer than I need to, but, no, that's a great question, man. So let's use the tube amp as a baseline, right? Let's use the tube guitar amp as a baseline for how we would think about quality control. So you take something like a Fender Twin, 85-watt 6L6 tube amp. More often than not, there's a 90% chance that that 6L6 85-watt amp is going to work just
fine
every single time. Because it's essentially, it's like a big black V8. It's just like, it's, I mean, 6L6 is really, have a great shelf life and have really, I mean, it's a workhorse. That's why the Twin is considered kind of a stage workhorse. Well, you take that same, you know, format of amp, and you talk about a Vox AC30.
That was my next question. Well, how do you handle the AC30s? They're all different.
Exactly. So the, you know, obviously those tubes are, I mean, I've had my AC30 for, oh, I don't know, probably 10 years now. I've had to replace all the tubes in there probably three times.
Wow.
And in the Twin, I have to replace them zero times. but I'm just saying, you know, I think that's a great question because I have to make sure when all that stuff leaves my shop, I have to go through every single parameter of that amp. I have to make sure that every knob is turning, that what I'm turning is changing the tone, that there's none of the what we'd call that rolling static on the pots. There's no weirdness in the inputs, that the tube sockets seem nice and tight, that the warmers on the tubes are actually firing, you know, all that stuff. Are the foot switches on the, you know, it's like with the Fender Twin. Are the foot switches on the foot switch itself, are they sticky? Are they working? When you take the foot switch jack out, is it still keeping the reverb in? Is it all these little quirky things? There's so many quirky things that we as guitar players, we just kind of learn as we go. But I think the tube guitar amp is a great baseline of like, we have to take care of that gear, and I have to also know, kind of just because it's the industry I'm in, I have to know that like when that amp comes back, I can't just be guaranteed it's just going to be working perfectly. You know, that's kind exactly, of what I'm, yeah. that's the risk I'm taking on. Right. So it is a delicate thing, but you know, we keep all our amps in nice road cases. We make sure that, hey guys, you know, if you're going to take this in the van, that's great. Please keep it in the road case. We want these things to be working great for you. If you guys are out on a tour, it's going to be a lot harder for me to troubleshoot that stuff if it's not being stored properly. You know, and it's just common. It's common sense, especially for a touring or working musician too, because they need the gear to work, you know, as good as I need it to work for them. So,
oh, I know.
But yeah, that quality control, it's important. It's important.
Well, it seems like if you were renting as you're touring and you're using the same system, and I'm going to ask both of you guys.
That's a luxury, by the way, Jeff, you know, to get the same stuff, you know, the way the economy is these days. You know, if you're doing two different, you're on an airplane literally every day, at least my experience here in the last couple of years, and having to scale down so much, we really have to rely on the backline companies because, I mean, I've had some Marshalls that are just great. I mean, just great. Like, mm-hmm. you almost want to buy it at the end of the day. You know, it sounds like I'm good. And other ones, like I said, it sounds like, you know, there's a blanket over the cabinet. But mm-hmm. we all just have to, you know, figure it out, bring proper tools to make it work on the gig. Yeah. We have no choice.
So there is an issue from going using different amps every night. I mean, when you know the amp, if you're using, whether it's yours or not, if you're touring and you're using the same one every night, you get to know what it does and what it doesn't
pretty
do.
Pretty much.
But let me ask you, Joel, how does it work? Do you give like a, I was brought up the old school, so we always had spares. When I brought my mm-hmm. amps, I always brought an extra amp. In the backline industry, do you supply spares, or you just give them one amp and cabinet?
No, I definitely will certainly bring out a spare. And a lot of times it may not be the same amp. It may be a like to like kind of thing. So, you know, if I've got a guy on stage and he's playing through a twin, I may have a Silverface twin that I've got as a backup, or mm-hmm. if my Silverface is out on the road, it might be a deluxe reverb. But at least it's giving him something where it's like, I know this other amp will suffice. Or if the artist's rider calls for a Fender twin, but his second preference is an AC30, then if I've got the AC30 sitting on the shelf, I should probably bring that out as his spare.
Okay.
Because that means if the twin goes down for whatever reason, I'm going to bring up the AC30 and he's like, oh, this is great. This is my second choice. So this is fine.
Well, that's good.
Well, let me throw this out to the guys here. When you were touring, both of you guys you toured last year at Europe. You're going back to Europe, Steve, and mm-hmm. you just got back. Did you have spares?
In some venues, yeah, we did have spares. In others, that was it. And sometimes when you're playing a vintage amp, here's would be my question as Marshalls go, too, is they all sound different in terms of, especially if you're putting a pedal board in front of it. And the clean tone varies from one Marshall to another, especially if you're playing something that's vintage as opposed to modern.
Right.
Modern will be a little more generic, whereas vintage will vary incredibly different. As simple as the high input versus the low input for like an 800 series. even vintage amps versus modern reissues.
Okay, but what about voltage too? You know, you're going to get into voltage things in mm-hmm. venues.
Exactly,
yeah, that's a whole other thing. I think there really is no benchmark. You know,
no, yeah, especially like in Europe where the
forget it.
It varies between 220 to 240.
Yeah, and I've heard that, and I've heard from many people that 220s sound totally different than the 110s. You know,
the stages all sound different. What if they're hollow? What if they're
we have built, right?
You know,
we just had that experience in the last venue we played in Belgium was that it was hollow underneath, and we had this really annoying like 60 and 80 hum,
yeah.
And our bass player, we all actually started catching on to it, and he goes, No, it's not that. It's not that. They literally had to dial that out of the PA and the bass direct to get it out from being it, because it was just interfering with everything we started
right,
to play.
Right.
There's a lot of variables, you know.
Let's right, but I mean, now yeah. you've played a lot of different amps. You've had some kind of, I would consider, more boutique amps, like those Mark, the ones made by Mark Bass that you were using in,
right,
and
right.
then. You have the Marshalls. How do you did you have a spare? Did you have, how does that work where you're using a custom boutique amp? That must have been tricky.
You just hope that you don't need the backup, you know?
but did you have a backup?
I do. Okay. Yeah. And I try, you know, you just hope every night, you know, that it comes out of the truck and it's set up properly and it'll get the job done. But yeah, you do have to have a spare. I mean, you have to. You know,
yeah.
with guitars and everything else. So very important, very important. You got to have that peace of mind, you know.
Now, Joel, when you set up a package for like a tour, what happens when they're playing like 7 dates and they can't take the same equipment with them? How do you coordinate? What do you do? Do you send one amp here, one amp, or, you know?
Well, generally speaking, I mean, that's going to be on the – maybe more challenging side of logistics. As you can imagine, it's tough because we are talking about renting, you know, generally speaking, expensive gear, and then making sure that it's properly transported and then properly like picked up, just like mm-hmm. just getting it back. You know, I'm sure I'm not alone here. It's like, If we all knew that our amps were somewhere, we just want to get them back. We don't even really care as much about the working order of them. We just want them back. So, I mean, you kind of put that all those logistics into consideration, and usually what we found is it's much easier for a long term rental when there is some way. For the client or the band or whoever is sort of helping to pay for this portion, to at least have us get to a location, whether it be to deliver it to them and they bring it back to us, or they pick it up from us, we get them all loaded up, and then we have to go meet them down in Dallas or something like that. Now, granted, that's a lot of logistics. That's a lot of travel, but, generally speaking, that's kind of the only way it really works out.
Yeah. Now, if you have something that they're picking up in St. Louis, do they deliver? Can they deliver in Austin or L.A.? Does it work that way?
I've certainly had those instances. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's not as much of a, pick it up here, drop it off here. Obviously, I'd rather them drop it off at our location down in Texas than, you know, on the side of the road mm-hmm. somewhere. But, and you know, what's interesting is, you know, we do try to manage all of our inventories for our locations, but hey, you know what? Sometimes we have unique productions that I'm like, hey, you know what? I need to bring a couple more sub cabinets up from, the Texas location. And, oh yeah, we got two twins down there. Let's throw them on the pallet with those subs and we'll just get that up on next week's shipment. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's stuff like that. You know, we can generally figure out a workaround. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you know, it's not the end of the world. So yeah, we definitely have had that happen before, and we always figure out a way to make it work. And the hardest part is when, someone other than myself, our entity is trying to handle like a shipping or a freight service. That gets really tricky because, you know, we're already set up to, we have companies that we work with that do great logistics and transport and shipping. So we already know what that means to, you know, as a drop ship or air cargo, or we know where, when our air cargo shipment comes in, we know exactly where it gets dropped. We know how to get to it. We know what time it's arriving to us. It's much harder for, say, a band to try to set something up like that. It's really difficult. You got BOLs, you got all this stuff that you have to kind of go through. So yeah, we can always, long story short, we can always figure that kind of stuff out. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, I could see that the logistics could be a big problem. Go ahead, Steve.
Joe, I was just wondering, does your company do things with, say, like endorsement stuff? Is it basically like just custom, like say drum kits, you know, like in Europe, for example, you know, it's the old thing. Our drummer has an endorsement, right? But meanwhile, you know, you gotta rehead the kit. It needs to be picked up at a certain spot and dropped off at the same spot at the end of the tour. Do you do anything like that? Or do you just pretty much do you have your, you know, your stuff that you do?
Yeah. So of course it's easier just to drop off a kit and everybody, and we say, will this work? And of course we always hope that it will, but you're right. There are some endorsement deals or, you know, hey, you know, I gotta have these symbols on this kit. I have to do it.
Cause you know, for consideration.
Yeah, it's just, it is what it is. I'm going to, you know, the drummer, he's got it. It's just gotta be there. So, We kind of see that stuff coming down the road. You know, that honestly, the writers are such a big part of what we do. I pride myself on my attention to detail with the writers. I really try to look at it from the manager or the, you know, in some cases, the guitar player's mind or whoever it is that, you know, that created the writer and created.
You don't
want
to get in this mind. I'll tell you that that's not a pretty place to be.
Well, let me throw this out real quick. So the people that don't understand, cause you're saying the term writer, how is it normally, how are you normally approached? Are you approached by the band or are you approached by the management company or by the agency? How does that usually work for you, Joel? How do you get the gig?
Yeah, so all of the above. So, I would say let's start at the corporate end. If it's a corporate gig, the agency or the corporation, organization, company who's putting on this event and has hired this band, they basically say, okay, well, so Joel, we're really excited about this, so on the second day, we're going to have this party. And this is going to be our band. So we're just going to go ahead and get you in touch with their manager, and you guys will figure it out. Or they'll say, hey, we got all this information from the EPK, the electronic press kit from this band. We like them. This is what they want. Can you do this? So in that case, I've gotten riders, and I've gotten that band information directly from my client, or I've had to just pick up the phone and call the band's manager or call one of the members in the band and talk through the, getting the writer and getting that, getting those requirements. So that would be on like the corporate side. Let's go over to like the festival side. So the festival side is usually, there may be a producer, or some organizer, and, that organizer has basically a list of everything. They've got the vendor list, like me, or the porta potties, or the, you know, or whatever it is. And then in that list should be band managers / band contacts. And generally speaking, then I would be kind of the liaison to say, hey, you know what? So just so there's no sort of mix up or, you know, game of telephone here, why don't I reach out to all your bands and let me request all those writers for you so I can just get those directly to me, because I'm the one that's going to be not only handling the back line, but also that there's monitor positions and all their stage positions as well. So that's usually how that works.
Now let me turn it to the other side. to you guys, to Steve and Kathy, how do you, like when you guys went on tour, who did you talk to tell, how did you demand the equipment that you needed to get? You know, what do you, where do you go? Well, start with Kathy.
Well, for Sister Skinner, it's, we do have a rider. It has a stage plot, has our basic requirements. 90% of the time, it seems to come, it's what our booking agent negotiates with the venue and the promoter. Like in the case where we just were in Europe, it wasn't a really big deal because the first gig, the anchor gig, the ship, I think has a supplied backline that they keep in stock. The same thing was true the second night in Sala, and the third in Verviers in the Spirit of 66. I mean, they have just gear that's been there forever.
I'm playing there in March, the Spirit.
Cool. You're going to love it, Steve.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt.
Let me interrupt real quick. A rider is your, like a document that lists what you need?
The rider includes everything from equipment to what color NMMs that we get, what kind of water we're going to drink, the hotel rooms, any special considerations. There's a lot of basic stuff. I have to promise to not be too outrageous when I created ours for the band, and I've abused that privilege a couple of times, but tone is tone. It's like for one instance for Europe, the last gig we played, we were actually part of, it was negotiated to use the band that was opening. We were using their gear to, and that all had to be negotiated way ahead of time. So to answer your question, it usually is the promoter or the venue that is negotiating with whoever company to bring in.
So you tell the promoter they're going to want you on the gig, and so you say this is what we need, and that's the writer.
Yeah,
you give them the writer.
Yeah, because it becomes part of the contract.
Okay, and what about you, Steve?
Well, for the European stuff, you know, we're fortunate enough, we have a warehouse and we have our stuff there. But where we run into difficulty is, you know, with the drum kits. And all of us are, you know, we're endorsed. I mean, part of surviving here in the modern world, number one, we've all had to scale down due to airline stuff.
Right.
We've had to, you know, just the stress of bringing guitars on and off airplanes is enough to drive you crazy from a musician standpoint. And also, Joel, what we have to do sometimes on festivals and fly dates is sometimes we can't bring that extra guitar. And then, you know, can somebody supply something generic that actually works, you know, that's been kind of gone through, that's on the side, that, you know, in case of a disaster striking on a festival thing. We just did this thing in Texas, and there was the lousiest Telecaster, you know, none of us play Telecasters, but okay, it was there in case something, you know, really bad happened. But you know, as far as horror stories go, I gotta say, within the last 2 years, all the backline companies have been really good. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had very, you know, you keep your expectations realistic. You know, mm-hmm. It's not going to be the same every night. You know,
yeah.
if you want that Marshall 900, and you want a certain kind of cabinet. You know, okay, and if you've got the slant one instead of the straight one, you know, it's, you just make it work. It's not that big a deal. You know, so.
But is it that hard to keep your tone consistent? Because you're, like, for you especially, your tone is your signature.
I've figured out my first line of defense is the guitar. You know, as long as my instrument is working correctly and I know it's in my hands and I have the scaled down pedal board with me, I can even make those Marshalls with 500 knobs work. You know, those ones that nobody likes, but everybody has. You know what I'm talking about, Joel.
Yeah.
You know, we can just get in the middle channel and let her rip. Just do the best you can with it.
I mean, I think you were telling me one time you got a solid state one, which is, that's a difference.
And I could still make it work because Steve's right.
You got to do
part of it's my hands.
Mm-hmm.
Another part is the guitar. and the other parts of my pedal board. And mine scale down for the road, too, because, like Steve's right, the airlines are brutal. And they'll chew you up and spit you out. All you have to do is get pulled aside by TSA
one
or
time.
Security.
Yep.
And you'll start, like, scaling it back and checking it and going, this ain't worth it. So the back line, like Steve says, is important, but it can't become a consuming factor for you. You have to learn to adapt. Otherwise, you won't get on stage. And a lot of my tone comes from the three things I can control: my hands, the guitar, and the pedal board.
Good point.
Right. Right.
Well, that's a really, really important point that you make. You know, I think that's speaking as a guitar player myself, you know, I have all these sort of, you know, preferences, right? We all have. I've got my own pedal board, and I've got my, you know, go-to guitars and my, you know, one or two amps that I prefer to play out with. But sometimes I find that I should be pulling the old Hot Rod Deluxe off the shelf and probably wheeling that in, because it's just gonna work.
It's consistent. It's gonna work.
Yeah, it's consistent, and it's gonna do the Fender thing, and, you know, I just needed to do the Fender thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll opt for a Fender over a Marshall. Usually Marshalls are on a Rider, but I'll opt for it because it is consistent. And when I get to the clean and knowing my pedal board and what I can wring out of it, because it's pretty common in rehearsal rooms, which we, like here in Los Angeles, we rehearse at PA Rehearsal Studios. I'm used to using that. So it really kind of doesn't – they can throw a solid state amp at me, and I can make it work.
That's good to know. Now, Joel, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Do you like, work with people, like, for Europe? Do you have, like, connections in Europe for – if you're – and, like, for Canada, you know, stuff like that, Canada or Mexico or South America?
No, I've worked with some Canadian bands here in the States, and I've actually worked with a Swedish group. They were a Grammy nominated group that came to the States, and I've worked with them. But I've never done any backline or any sort of work like that overseas. I would love to. It'd be cool to kind of figure that out and, figure out how to make all that work. That would be pretty sweet. There'd be a lot of voltage converters in the mix on that, but that would be amazing.
Or you just get gear that's already at 220.
You take, you go back in the back there and behind the head and grab your quarter and flip that over to the,
that voltage converter can be a nightmare too. It's like, I had two incidences. Well, I just blew up my small traveling pedal board in Verve at Spirit of 66.
What kind of power converter did you have on there?
I took one of a step down transformer.
Oh, okay.
And I'd set it, and but we were using mine for something else, and they had, Verviers had a huge, massive step-down transformer that they used, and I plugged my pedal board in there first before...
Oops.
And all of a sudden, it was fine. 15 minutes later, it was not.
Wow.
Hello. Fortunately, it didn't fry my pedals, but it did fry the power supply, and good night, nurse. That was, after that, it was like, okay, what the heck am I going to do here? And I borrowed the other guitar player. She lent me hers, and I got through but it just wasn't my tone, not happening. So the very final night, I went direct, and, you know, I was just forced to do that till I get home.
Ouch.
But it happens.
Now, let me ask, we're almost out of time. It's getting close. I want to ask one thing, and that is pointers. In terms of their writers as artists, what makes your job easier? What makes it more consistent for them? Is there any advice you can give in what they need to request?
Yeah, absolutely. I certainly don't want to shortchange, you know, anyone's preferences, right? I mean, we all have our preferences of gear. But I think so when I get a rider and I see, you know, first preference is a matchless DC-30, but my second preference is a Chieftain. Mm. I just scratch my head and, you know, I'm just like, that's amazing. Like, and I think the takeaway is, yes, we want to hold ourselves to a really like high standard, but sometimes I think we just need to, just like you guys were saying, I mean, it's so refreshing to hear that you guys are like, hey, you know what? I've made direct work. It's not ideal, but I'll make it work. Sometimes I'll take a fender over a Marshall just because I know it's going to be more, reliable. That's amazing to hear because, it is a challenge when I do get some very difficult pieces to fill. And then it makes me feel like, am I going to give them a substitution that's just, you know, I guess an insult, which I never want to do. I mean, I would be crushed to think I'm insulting someone with this still very nice, decent piece of gear. I don't know if that makes sense to you guys at all, but I think that's the biggest takeaway is that
totally,
you know, really having this step back moment where you're like, okay, Joel, you know, you've got your, you know, looking at my Dr. Z Mavs 38 and my my Longhorn Stampede.
I'll take one of those.
And I'm
I love Longhorn amps.
And, you know,
you
do
think
I,
you could get me an Il Vaquero?
Yeah, exactly. I got to give a shout out to Terry Wright. He makes the Longhorns, and he's just such an awesome guy. But do I really need that for this show? I'm going to be playing. I'm going to be playing some R&B, and I think a deluxe will be just fine.
Absolutely.
So, you know, step back into the deluxe territory, now we're talking about I can get that. Every backline place should have that. Every backline rental house should have that deluxe reverb. And so now we're able to actually do some work, right? Mm-hmm. If I need a Strat, can I get away with just, can I have a three single coil Strat? Is that okay? Yeah, if I can do that, every rental house should have a three single coil Strat. So I think that's the takeaway is, you know, really approaching it from a, what's going to get the job done and we can move forward.
Yeah.
You know, what I've
and
really found
also
too.
just being very deep, like just being very clear on like, especially with bands, like, Please look at your stage plots. Please make sure that you have stage left and stage right and not house left and house right. Please make sure you have the right number of wedge monitors. If the star vocalist needs to, please put two monitors on that stage plot. And if you can give me an input list, you know, that's amazing. You're the best. If you can give me the input list that has all your stuff on there where you want it, my guys can go to work on getting that board wrung out and sussed out for you guys so much faster. Mm.
Really good point.
Yes.
You know, and the techs that are dropping off the gear, you know, I found, you know, I've really not had a bad experience in the last couple of years here. Everybody's been really super cool. You're nice to them. They're nice to you. If I like the 4x12 cabinet, you know, in the tray, you know, rather than being on the stage, you know, you want some extra stuff. And the guy's really nice. Then I go out and get him a beer and everybody's fine.
Yeah,
you know, you're relatively taken care of, and I think that's a really important aspect because we all got to make it work.
Right. Now,
amen.
I told you we'd run out of time; it would go by real fast. We're already out of time, but what I want you to do is give everybody the information how to contact you and the website and all that stuff.
Absolutely. So my name is Joel Dodson. My company is TSV, like Tom, Sam, Victor. Sound and Vision, and you can always reach me at my St. Louis location, and that's 314-658-9516, and the website is tsvsoundandvision.com or tsvusa.com.
Oh, okay. TSVUSA. Okay. USA.com. And real quick, guys, Steve, what's coming up for you, and give your website and info.
It's stevefister.com, and we're going to be in Europe from mid-March until mid-April.
Okay. And, nice, man.
And that's going good. And, of course, we've got the NAMM show, which we'll be playing our trio show for Godan Guitars. And
Joel, are you going to be coming down to NAMM?
Oh, no, I'm not. But I've got a buddy, Matt Chulka, who's from St. Louis. He's a fingerstyle guitar player. He's going to be there showing off some amazing acoustics. And if you guys get a chance, you should check him out.
Yeah. No, let me know what booth he's going to be at. We'll check it out.
I will. Yeah.
Kathy, tell us what's going on with you guys and your information.
Website is www.sisterskinner.com. That's spelled SYSTYRSKIN-NERD.com. Sorry about the spelling, but we had to get around Lynyrd Skynyrd, and that was the way we got around Lynyrd Skynyrd. It works, folks. Let me tell you, it works. We should be back in Florida in February. If we're really lucky, we'll be back in Florida again in February. And then if we're really, right. really lucky, we'll be in Dubai after that. And then if we're, we might be back in Europe as early as April.
Wow. So you guys might even cool. get to, you guys might even get to meet over at the Spirit of 66.
Yeah. I love that gig. It's one of my favorite gigs.
So anyway,
it's a cool place.
Joel, I want to thank you. And obviously, as I told you, we never get enough time to finish everything. We're going to have another show. We got to talk more about this stuff. So I really thank you.
Oh, yeah, man. I can't wait. And I just want to say real quick, all you guys, all you like musicians, you guys are doing it. Just keep doing that amazing stuff. It's amazing to hear these stories, and just you guys just keep doing you.
Awesome. Thank you.
We will.
And also, too, thank again Emily Kaiser. She was the one that put us together. And you guys, Joel, thank you. Doug, Steve, Kathy, it's great to have you here on the show. We will talk to you later. Hang on, Joel, and I'll talk to you after the show is over briefly. But everybody have a great week, and we will see you next week.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. That's right. Take care, guys.